Hi, friends, and welcome to the Vi Faith podcast. My name is Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. This season on Vi Faith, we're talking about the ins and outs of vocational ministry. Now, before we get to the show today, I want to tell you something I'm so excited about, and it's an opportunity that you have to join in with me for Bible study. Lifeway Women has chosen to do my Bible study, Seek First the Kingdom, for their online Bible study this spring, and registration for it is now open. Now, you might be wondering what Lifeway's online Bible study is. Basically, you sign up to join thousands of other ladies in doing a specific Bible study, which in this case is mine. Woo! And you'll receive links to free teaching videos each week in your email. And you can do this study as an individual or with your small group. Like I said, registration is happening right now and it continues through April 20th. The study itself starts on April 21st. I've put all the pertinent links in my show notes, or you can find out more at lifeway.com/seek first. I'd love it if you joined me to study the book of Matthew this spring. Okay, friends, let's get to the show today. My guest today is Rachel Welcher. Rachel has been on the show before, so you might remember her. She is a pastor's wife living in South Dakota. She's married to Evan and mom to their new little one, who is simply adorable. You may know Rachel also as the author of Talking Back to Purity Culture. She joins me today to talk about church hurt and church conflict. How can we, as pastor's wives, navigate situations that leave us dealing with anger, bitterness, cynicism, and sadness? Rachel addresses how we can know when we need to confront someone who has hurt us, how we can deal with hurt when we can't confront that person, how we can respond when someone says we've hurt them, and how we can respond when it's our husband who is hurt. And as you can tell, we cover a lot of ground in this interview, so let's get to it. Here, friends, is my conversation with Rachel Welcher. Welcome back to By Faith, Rachel Welcher. I'm so glad to have you.
Oh, it's so good to be back. What, it's been a few years.
It's been a few years.
Yeah.
Much has changed in your life since then. But I loved that conversation we had. I'm going to link to it for people who are listening who might not have heard it, because you just were such a great guest. Very vulnerable, authentic, but full of truth, talking about what you've learned through deep suffering. So right. I appreciated that so much.
Absolutely. No, I think, you know, it in some ways, when you get the chance to share your story of suffering, it feels like God's redeeming it a little bit, because you realize that, okay, he might be using what you went through to help someone else go through it. So for me, it always feels like a privilege to get to share my story in that way. And just in the off chance that it could help someone else and mean something and not just be, you know, pain that happened.
Right. Well, life has changed since then. I'd love for you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about where you are and your family and that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah. Quite a bit has changed. I think when I talked to you, I don't even know if my book had come out.
No.
So I had a book that came out. Now it's been over a year, Talking Back to Purity Culture. I did that with IBP. I had finished my master's degree through St. Andrews, and my husband and I were serving at a church in Glenwood, Iowa, but we actually just moved to South Dakota, Vermilion, South Dakota. It's a small town. It's a college town. So it's real cute and has an interesting atmosphere, just because the university is spread throughout the town and everything is kind of centered around that. Hmm. And so we have a small town church, but we have this unique opportunity to reach out to students. So we're really excited. We just got here. We're just barely getting to know the people here. And right when we got here, I went into labor with our first baby. And so it was kind of early. And so we kind of started off our time in a new place, a new church, isolated and being parents. Mm. And so I'm learning to be a mom at a new church in a new town. And so far people have just been really lovely. And in fact, the ladies at this church are going to throw me a baby shower. My baby's 2 months old, but they really want to celebrate that. And so it's just so sweet. And I'm excited to get to know them better.
That is so nice. Tell us about South Dakota.
It's very cold. You know, I'm a California girl, and so the Midwest has been a little rough on me. The seasonal affective disorder is real. Yes. I'm kind of solar powered. So when the sun comes out, it's just a game changer. And in fact, today it's in the 50s and the sun is out and I'm going to take a walk with baby. And it revives me, body and soul. So South Dakota, yeah, it's pretty cold. And because there aren't any real hills or mountains, it's very windy here.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing to block the wind. But what's really wonderful about the Midwest is that things grow beautifully. And so the house we moved into has all these planter boxes. The former owners were gardeners. And so I can grow all sorts of vegetables and flowers. Things just, they bloom here. So spring is a wonderful time in South Dakota.
That sounds amazing. I love it. I wouldn't love the cold. I'm like you. I love that you said you're solar powered. That is so me. Yes. Well, I asked you, Rachel, to join me to talk about something that every pastor's wife navigates, but it's really hard to talk about. So thanks for being willing to talk about church hurt and conflict with me.
Sure. Absolutely.
So let's just dive right in. As I was thinking about this subject, I was thinking about how, you know, recently my husband and I have been doing premarital counseling with a couple, and we were talking about, you know, conflict is inevitable. It's just a matter of how you deal with it, right? And I was thinking about that in terms of church. Do you think that conflict is inevitable in church life as well? And if so, is it the same as kind of marriage conflict, or how would you characterize what we should expect in terms of church conflict?
I think that's a really good question. In some ways, in marriage, there are conflicts that every marriage has to work through in order to build that intimacy and connection. Whereas in church life, there are ways to avoid getting close to people. And so I would say that in church life, you can avoid the same level of conflict that you experience in marriage, but that's not necessarily a good thing. I think that if you're really digging into relationships, you're involved in the church, you're getting to know people, misunderstandings are going to happen.
Which,
I mean, that might sound like kind of a pessimistic view, but I actually think it's positive in that the more there's conflict, the more we get to practice listening, forgiving, being humble. And as we've all experienced, if you go through a conflict successfully with someone, you have this deep relationship that you didn't have before. Sadly, a lot of conflict just leads to bitterness and lack of communication, but conflict that is actually worked through can lead to some really deep relationships in the church, where suddenly this person that you had all these assumptions about becomes a true brother and sister in Christ that you worked, you did the hard work. So in marriage, you know, you say, I'm committed to this person, so I can't just ignore this because we're, you know, going to be together. And so we have to work it out. I think in the church, often when you have conflict, you either just go to another church down the road, or if it's a big enough church, you can just avoid that person. And so I do think we don't see conflict worked through as often in the church as we do in marriage.
Yes. And I don't think we're taught how to work through conflict in the church. It's never talked about until it happens, but we don't even know. We're not even sure if we are allowed to talk about it. You know, is talking about it gossip? Is talking about it the right thing? We don't know. And so I'm wondering, have you been taught, or how have you seen church conflict handled?
Well, you know, I grew up as a pastor's kid. And so I got to watch my parents handle conflict in the church. They did so much counseling and they were really open with us kids. I mean, it was kind of like, okay, these people in these situations are coming into our home. You're going to hear conversations. So we might as well just talk with you about how we're counseling this, you know, situation. And so I always kind of knew what was going on in the church because it was happening right under my nose. And my parents would talk through why they said certain things and handled situations the way they did. And so always, I feel like I did learn a lot by watching my parents. And they would even say when they feel like they got it wrong. But so I think some of the biggest advice that I learned from my mom, and this doesn't just apply to church conflict, it could apply to marriage or friendship, is that if someone has offended you, you really only have two choices. One is that you let it go. You roll it onto God's shoulders. You talk about your frustration to him And then you forgive it and you just let go of that bitterness. And the other is that you actually confront it, because if you don't get to just stew in bitterness without either letting it go or confronting it. And what her point was that, you know, I don't just get to be mad at someone, but they don't know why. Hmm. And that really stood out to me, because for those who are into the Enneagram, I'm a two, and my natural inclination is to not want to offend anyone and to want people to like me. And so I don't like to confront things, but that doesn't mean I don't get mad. And so what's really unfair about that is I might be really struggling with bitterness against someone and they have no idea why, and they've never been given the chance to address or work through the thing I'm upset with them about. And so it's really unfair. So that's why my mom would always say, you know, if she was upset with something that happened in the church, she either had to let it go or confront it. And there was really no other option.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. It also makes me think, as a pastor's wife, sometimes it's a little bit unclear when I should confront something and when it would maybe be inappropriate for me.
Exactly.
To do that. So how do you know the difference?
So I would say as just a Christian, it's one thing for me to be able to confront someone who's hurt me. But as a pastor's wife, it's a whole nother ball game, because what I've found is that my husband, he doesn't want me to feel like I have to go to bat for him. And so he will often tell me, no, I don't want you to confront that person about what they said, because I get upset about how they treat him.
Yes.
So that's a question that you had sent me to think about, to mull over, which was, you know, where does the church hurt come from? And it's not really even so much about how I get treated. That's one thing. But I can get over that. I really struggle with how people treat him. And so the predicament I found myself in over the last few years is that if someone treats Evan poorly, I don't necessarily get to confront it. I'm not allowed. And I don't want to say I'm not allowed to, like he's some domineering person. He's not. It's more he's trying to protect me from feeling like I have to fight his battles. But the hard part about that is then I have to deal with the first option, which is I have to work through it and eventually forgive it and let it go.
Yes.
And I'm not great at that. I tend to hold grudges, which is a terrible quality, but it's hard for me, to let it go when I see someone treat him poorly. Mm-hmm. So I'm still working through that. I wish I could say I figured out how to forgive quickly. But I have not.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time.
And I don't know that forgiveness, there's a time frame on it. You know, I think sometimes we feel like if we can't do it immediately, then we're wrong. But sometimes we have to work through that. So that's, I'm wondering if you could give an example of, and I'm not asking this because we want juicy details. Right. I'm asking this because I want you to be able to voice what many listeners are experiencing. And just saying, you know, this stuff does happen. Can you give an example of maybe a time when you've experienced hurt within the church and maybe what you would go back and do differently? And then maybe, hey, here's something I've learned that I would do that again.
That's a hard one. I'll say this without incriminating details, but I remember one Sunday, just about 5 minutes before Evan was going to go up to preach, two older saints cornering him and actually screaming in his face about an aesthetic decision about the sanctuary. And I remember, you know, I was watching that happen. And, you know, I'm constantly praying for Evan, that God would use his gifts and his words. And part of those prayers includes that he would be encouraged enough to keep going in ministry, because mm-hmm. it's so discouraging so often. And especially in the last few years with COVID, so many pastors have quit, understandably so. And so I just remember watching that happen and feeling many things. I think the overwhelming feeling was, why are we even doing this? You know, why are we putting ourselves through this? Why am I putting, not that it's my decision alone that he's a pastor, but why would we do this as a vocation when this is how he's being treated? And the struggle with that situation was what I said, where I didn't necessarily feel the freedom to confront them, because it was his, you know, he wanted to handle it because it was happening to him. But what's so hard is that in marriage, you're one, right? And so it was happening to me as well, because I love him and I feel a protection over him. And so I didn't confront those women. And the truth is, I just never felt like I could have true fellowship with them again. So that's me being really honest. It's not advice. It's just a sad story of watching them scream in his face, not being able to confront it. And even if I had been able to confront it, knowing that it probably wouldn't have made a difference in this particular case. And then just feeling like suddenly fellowship was broken. Hmm. And some of the people I would be sitting next to, you know, hated my husband. And just the way that that then impacts your ability to worship, to engage with others, the timidity then that you have to approach other people in the church and to get to know them and be vulnerable with them when you know that this could happen, you don't know who to trust.
That's it. Yeah.
And this is not specific of one. This happened in a specific church, but it's really not about a specific church. It's the kind of thing that happens to pastors all the time, anywhere. And so it's very difficult as a pastor's wife to be vulnerable and know that if it's safe to do so, mm-hmm. because you never know when the person that you think that you have a real friendship with will get mad over something you or your husband did, and then use the things you've shared with them against you. And that's just the real truth about being a pastor's wife, is that it's really hard to know who your true friends are.
Mm-hmm. And in that situation, And I like that you give voice to, this isn't just a one-time thing, that this is something that we have to navigate quite a bit, not someone necessarily screaming in their face or our husband's face, but especially this dynamic of it's happening to my husband, but I can't, there's not an avenue. It would not be appropriate for me to address it. Can you walk me through how you then do that option one of casting this upon the Lord, sharing with him your anger, that kind of thing? Can you kind of give voice to that?
Right. I think that's the question, right? Is that if we can't confront it, then what do you do? I love how honest the Psalms are. And I feel like they have taught me that I can lay my frustration before the Lord in a way that, say, I don't feel like I can share with a friend because it would be gossip, because maybe it's about someone they know. So I don't know where to vent. I can vent to God through prayer. And I think that's been really helpful for me to just name my hurt to him. And then the other most effective thing for me has been to take that person, to picture them and remember that I have been forgiven, and that they have been forgiven by Christ, and to view them as, to view us on the same level, that we're both recipients of grace and we're both undeserving. It's that parable of, you know, the man who owed a debt and was forgiven, and then he goes out and strangles a guy for a few pennies. I think I have to remind myself not to be that man that is forgiven of so many sins and then goes out and won't forgive someone else. That's how I have to view that person, as beloved of Christ, that I have been forgiven much and I need to forgive much. Having said that, it's obviously easier said than done. And I think it, like you said about forgiveness, it's not instantaneous. And sometimes we think we've forgiven and then the resentment bubbles up and we have to go back on our knees and, you know, really lament to God and say, this isn't how it's supposed to be. The body of Christ is not supposed to hurt each other, but we're sinners and we will. And to just cry out to the Lord and say, this hurts. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel fair. I'm angry at this person. And I will be honest. I have prayed a prayer multiple times about other people in the church that God would shut their mouth like the lions in the lion's den with Daniel. Uh-huh. I really have. And I think that that's not always been a sinful, vindictive prayer, but just to say, these are people who are causing hurt right now. I hope they heal. I hope they grow. But Lord, for now, would you just not allow their words to have influence, because their words are leading to death, not life. And so I have actually prayed that prayer. so I think we can be really honest with God, and pastors' wives, sadly, don't always know who they can talk to about church situations because they don't want to gossip and they don't always know who they can trust. And so prayer becomes even more vital as a pastor's wife. And I'm not saying you shouldn't talk to, that you shouldn't find people to confide in, because we need that. But I just think that prayer has been such a freeing place where I can tell God anything. Mm-hmm. I can just lay all of it down at his feet because he already knows, he understands. And I can name my hurt to him.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. Have you ever been in an instance where you have confronted someone? And when I say confront, I guess there might be more opportunities or times where we have to go and say, hey, what you said really hurt me, or what you did really hurt me.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that with someone in the church? And if so, could you describe that, what you did?
Mm-hmm. You know, not often enough. I would like to practice that more, where I'm just more honest with people and give them the chance to work through, give them the chance to change, because that's what I would want them to do for me. Mm-hmm. So I've only done it a few times. And when I have, it doesn't necessarily go well the first time, but what I found is that over time, that person, if they stick around, I grow in my understanding of them. And often the action that hurt me makes a lot more sense and hurts less once I see that what they're going through, because so often we just act out in our own pain, right? And so once you get to know someone more, your compassion and empathy grow. And so when I have taken the time to actually have a conversation, my resentment usually fades pretty quickly because they become so much more human to me. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to misunderstand when you just sit and stew in that misunderstanding without actually approaching the person. So I do believe that gentle confrontation, and again, confrontation where you're just saying, this hurt me, and you're giving them a chance to say, oh, I had no idea, or this is why I said it, or I'm sorry. And some of that resentment can just melt away. And then, as we said at the beginning, you are left with a stronger connection with that person than you would have had without the conflict.
Mm-hmm. And you have opportunity to offer grace, forgiveness, or if it's the other way around, to apologize and to receive that grace, which I do want to talk about that in a bit. But what you just said, you use the word resentment. And I think that maybe it's just me, but I sometimes wonder if for pastors' wives, the primary thing that can take them out of commission, and, you know, they might still show up, but they're out of commission. They're not engaged relationally, emotionally, because of resentment and bitterness, or sometimes cynicism. I've seen cynicism in my own life because I've been hurt.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to pick yourself back up and get back in there. And then inevitably it happens. Mm-hmm. And then you have to get yourself back up and head back in there. And that's just kind of the cycle. And I don't think, and I'm not saying that cynically. I think that's what it means to be human.
Right.
And to be in relationship with people. But I'm wondering what you have learned about bitterness and how to, as Hebrews says, root out that bitterness.
I wish I could say that I was more of an expert on it than I am. I think that I've seen in my own heart that where I would call it that I'm making peace, often it's just I'm too cowardly, and I am bitter, and I'm not giving them the chance to change, and I'm robbing them of the chance to change by saying that I'm making peace by not mentioning it, but really it's not helpful to them or me. And so I think that, you know, we want to be people of forgiveness and peace, but sometimes we use that as an excuse.
Yes.
Not to be brave and to have hard conversations. And that's me. I really would rather have, you know, friendly interaction and not, the idea of confronting someone is stressful. It takes a lot of work to have those conversations. So bitterness grows, right? It's watered by lack of communication. So the more you communicate with someone, usually the more clarity you get. Now online interactions, I've seen the opposite.
Yeah.
So I don't know about that, but in person, in church, I would say that bitterness is only going to grow with avoidance.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to just have that hard conversation. And again, it doesn't have to be accusatory. It can just be I language, not you. It can just be saying, I was hurt by this, mm-hmm. not you did this to me and you meant it this way, because we don't know, but this hurt me when it happened or when you said this, and then just let them respond. Maybe they didn't know. Maybe they've been waiting to apologize. There are just so many beautiful things God can do in our hearts when we have those hard conversations.
Yes. I'm an avoider as well. Mm. And someone used the term peace faking instead of peacemaking. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's me. I can peace fake. I'll just absorb it all mm-hmm. instead of dealing with it. But that's when my bitterness grows.
Same. Yep.
Yeah. So you're right. It's like, if it's an ongoing issue, I have got to communicate according to the Spirit's mm-hmm. leading. And one thing I like to do, not like to do, but I have determined that I will not avoid people that mm-hmm. make me uncomfortable. So it's not that I go straight toward them, but I will not, in the past, I would just like not speak to them, or I would go mm-hmm. to the other side of the room or whatever. And now it's like, no, I'm not going to avoid anyone. Every mm-hmm. person isn't made in God's image.
Yeah.
I can honor them. I don't have to let them in to right. the deepest right. thoughts that I have. Like what right. you describe with these women, those aren't safe, trustworthy people.
No.
But I can honor people. I can honor everyone. Right.
No, I think that's a really beautiful distinction, because it's okay to have boundaries. It's in mm-hmm. fact, I don't know that we can survive ministry without some boundaries, but we can still approach people with love without giving them, like you said, our deepest thoughts. There are levels. We need to recognize that in church, you can have levels of relationship, and that's perfectly fine. You don't have to be best friends with every, and in fact, we don't have to get to a place where we like people. We just have to be at a place where we love them and show them dignity, because I think it might be too much to ask that you like every single person you go to church with. I don't believe that that's super realistic, like in terms of personalities clicking. And that's not what it's about. In family, you have family members that you don't connect with, you don't understand, you might not like them, but you love them and you're going to treat them with dignity and you're going to be there for them. And it's the same way in the church. You don't have to want to go get coffee with someone and tell them your deepest thoughts in order to show them love.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. We've talked a lot about the emotion of anger, resentment, but I want to talk about sadness, because I think some of our hurt in church mm-hmm. comes from sadness over people walking away from the faith mm-hmm. or walking away from their marriages or, you know, unrepentant sin. And I think the primary one we experience most consistently is people leaving the church. And, you know, when people we've served and we've invested in, maybe are good friends with, and they say we're leaving, that is so painful. And people say, don't take it personally. It's like, well, how do you not take it personally?
Right.
It's personal. Right. How do you deal specifically, kind of like, what's the self-talk, or, you know, what do you do when that happens, when someone that you love and care for says, I'm leaving?
Oof. I don't know. I don't know that I have an answer to that. I don't know that I've gotten to a place where I feel like I have figured that out. I need to be honest about that. And I haven't been I've been a pastor's kid my whole life, but I've only been a pastor's wife for, about 5 years. I think it's what's difficult. And there's a Tim Keller quote, a C.S. Lewis quote in there somewhere, that, you know, to love is to be vulnerable. If you're going to actually care about people in the church, then you're going to care when they leave. And so it's like, it's a choice. Either you have a heart of stone and you protect yourself, but then you're never really having true connections. And then maybe it's not as hard when they leave. But I think you and I both know that you can't live that way within the church. And so we can't just constantly be thinking about self-preservation. So the other side of that is you're going to hurt when people leave. And I think maybe part of it is just giving ourselves permission to let ourselves hurt and to say, it makes sense that this hurts me.
Yes.
Because I'm human, because I cared. And it's not that it's all about numbers and maintaining a certain, you know, number of sheep in your flock. It's that you form actual connections with people. They contribute to the body life. And you know that when they leave, they're going to be leaving a void. And so, because it's just like if a family member dies, moves, it changes the dynamic. And of course, God can bring in other people into the church and things change and progress and grow. But when you lose core families at a church, it really, and individuals, it really does have an impact. And the last few years, I would say every single church has experienced that with COVID. People have moved, people have stayed home because they needed to, but it's just changed the dynamics. Mm-hmm. And so almost every pastor and pastor's wife has had to deal with watching that happen.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out, how do you not take it personally in the sense, not be offended by it, but let yourself feel the pain of it?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. I think you just have to work through that pain and feel it. I don't think there's a way to necessarily avoid it.
Yeah. Although we want a way to avoid it.
Yeah.
I think that's so true. Like feeling the sadness, but not being offended. I like how you put that. One thing it does for me is it often, I have to acknowledge the button it's pushing in me, meaning it's pushing a button of, let's say, fear, or fear that, oh no, like, are we not doing things well, or guilt because, oh, I should have done something to keep them. It's up to me. And so often there's these things I'm believing below the surface. And if I look at the button it's pushing for me, it often shows where I'm not trusting the Lord. So it's kind of an opportunity to go, okay, if none go with me, I still will follow you, Jesus. Like, I'm not here for this certain person. I'm here for you. And I want to be faithful to you.
That's really good. Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah. It does reveal what we're valuing and the foundation that we think the church is built on. And so often people are leaving the church for reasons that are not wrong. And so to respect that, maybe they're moving, maybe they do need to serve at another church. And so to be okay with, to be selfless enough to kind of bless their journey.
Yes.
And say, go forth. It kind of like when the church sends out missionaries, it's a beautiful thing if we can, and we can't always, because sometimes people are just leaving the faith or leaving in bitterness and they're, it's not the right choice. But for so many others, we need to be willing to say, it hurts that you're leaving, but we're sending you out to wherever you're going next with our blessing.
Yes.
You know, be the church wherever you go. It's hard to do when they're close friends, though.
It is. I was just like thinking about my own hurt. And we're talking about church hurt for pastors' wives and pastors, which I think can be surprising maybe for people to hear who aren't, to think about the pastor and his wife gets hurt too, because so much of our talk of church hurt these days is about people in the pews,
right?
And they do get hurt by their leaders. Sure. Absolutely. And so I'd like to kind of flip that coin a little bit and look at that and say, have there been times where someone has come to you and said, In a gracious way. Mm. First of all, how did they do that in a way that you were able to receive that? And then what did you learn about just being a pastor's wife and how to respond to people?
Mm. Well, I think there's two situations that happen. One is if people approach the wife about her husband, that's tricky because you're not your husband and you don't want to necessarily, I don't want to speak for Evan. And I get really defensive too. So I'm going to be a lot less probably humble if they're critiquing him. Often I will, if it's about him, I will say, you need to talk to him about that. I can't speak for him. He's an individual. But I've obviously had people share things with me ways that I've hurt them. And I think what I've learned from that is that when I get to the place where I'm finally willing to confront, I often am so burnt out that I am not as gracious. So it's like, I can be so kind, but then I reach a wall. And so sometimes by the time I'm willing to say something, I speak it really bluntly and hurt people. And so I don't want to get to the place where I'm lacking empathy, where I'm so frustrated or bitter that when it finally does come out, it's not kind. And I've realized from people talking to me that I do that sometimes. And so that's been a way that I've been challenged to grow, that it's better to say something sooner rather than to let the bitterness grow and then say it later. And often they're like, wait, you've been feeling that this whole time. And it's not very fair that you didn't let me know. And so I have hurt people with my bluntness. My natural bent is to kind of, we're supposed to speak the truth in love. And sometimes I speak in love and sometimes I speak in truth, and to do the two together is the key.
Yeah.
And so when I've been confronted, it's usually because I've fallen too hard on one side or the other and haven't done a good job of speaking the truth in love. And I'm thankful, but other times I've been confronted and it's not been, something that I did wrong. And so, I experienced that a situation where people were saying that I was in sin for being remarried to Evan. And that was a confrontation that was not in good faith and was not a true conviction that I have. I know that I've walked in obedience with my remarriage to Evan. And so in that situation, it was one of those cases where I had to pray through that bitterness and work through forgiving someone for gossiping about me.
Hmm. You mentioned Evan and your defensiveness toward him. And I think I can totally relate. I get more defensive about my husband than I get about myself.
Yeah. You know? Same.
And I'm like a mama bear, like, don't mess with my husband or my kids.
Yep.
Right. Totally. And so I'm wondering if you can kind of give perspective on the best way to respond. I mean, you've already mentioned a little bit about if it's about him, you say, go talk to him. But what are some things that you've learned about responding when Evan's been hurt, where he says, I'm hurt?
Yes. So he and I have only been married. We've been married less than 5 years. And so we're still learning each other. And one thing I've learned is that when I'm frustrated, I like someone to affirm how I'm feeling by agreeing and saying, yeah, that was wrong. So that's what I try to do when Evan's telling me how he feels. And what I've realized is that does not help him. In fact, what it does is then it becomes about my anger and he doesn't get to vent and just be human. And he doesn't get to share his feelings because now his feelings are igniting mine. And you know, he doesn't necessarily want to share something with me if he thinks it's going to make me really mad. And so what I've realized is that when he's sharing his hurt, I need to not add fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
And that's hard for me because, again, I keep thinking that that's the way he'd feel affirmed. But we are different people and you have to learn to love your spouse and your friends and anyone in the way that they receive love. Right. And so that's been kind of surprising to me, is that instead of me sort of saying, yeah, that was, you have the right to be mad about that, and I'm mad too, I just need to say, to listen and say, I'm sorry. That's hard. And not make it worse.
Mm-hmm. Hmm? Has he told you that? Has he said, don't feel the flames? Like, this is what I need to say.
Yeah. Essentially yes. I've picked up on the fact that it doesn't help.
So he wants what from you in that instance?
I think he just wants a listening ear and he wants to be able to process it and then move on. And he doesn't want to create bitterness in me by processing it. But of course it's hard because when I hear what someone has done to him, I get upset. So sometimes he just won't tell me and I don't want that. And so I have to learn how to balance not getting too angry and just listening and then letting, you know, if he is at a place where he can forgive, I need to not make that harder
by
hanging on to bitterness. And sometimes I'm still mad at something that someone did to him and he's already over it. And so I have to practice just that self-control of working through my feelings and letting him be moved by the Spirit in that good way that he is, and not bringing him back down into bitterness. Because, you know, when you've been hurt by the church, it can be easy to stew and it can be easy to burn out. And you can drag each other down in that and just stay there. And that's so he and I both, I think, worked actively on being honest about our pain with each other, but also trying to say, okay, but we are called to this. we are also human, just like the people we serve, and trying to get back up and get back on the horse together. And so I need to just be really sensitive to not bringing him down by letting my bitterness, my lingering bitterness, make him bitter again when he maybe had already moved on.
Yes. So, that's really good.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Oh yeah. What is y'all's line? I think every marriage is different. Every pastor and pastor's wife does it differently in terms of what he tells her. What's the line that y'all have drawn? Do you know everything? Are there some things he doesn't tell you? That kind of stuff. Like what, mm-hmm. what are you learning about that?
I've learned that there are things that he doesn't share with me because he doesn't want me to look at that person at church and struggle to love them. And so there are times, which that maybe says something about me, that I am too easily offended, but I think also he tries to protect me. So if he needs to talk it out, we're best friends. So we do tend to talk about most things, but if someone confides in him and I don't need to know, he doesn't share it with me.
Right.
You know, if they confide, usually if someone confides in him, and he tells me it's because they wanted me to know, we tend to do a lot of counseling together. Mm. So especially if it's a female congregant, if they're confiding in him, they want my advice as well. And so he doesn't tell me things about people that I don't need to know or that they don't want me to know. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that because I think that it makes him someone who can be trusted by the congregants. Mm-hmm. So just because he had a counseling session with someone doesn't mean that the pastor's wife has to know all that nitty gritty stuff. It doesn't help the situation, but people will sometimes give him permission and say, share this with your wife, or women will share things with me in the church and say, you can talk to Evan about this. And I'd love to hear his thoughts. And so we kind of look to our congregants for permission.
Yeah.
If they give us the green light. And usually when people share things with one or the other, they expect Evan and I to respond as a unit because we are so close and we do tend to do our counseling together. Hmm. But yeah, think when little things happen that might bother me because he was mistreated, he won't always share it with me. Mm-hmm. Maybe he would more often if I responded better.
Yeah. So, if it's a little thing, my husband doesn't tell me, but if it's a big thing, an ongoing issue, he tells me.
Oh, for sure. Because that's going to affect, he's going to need to talk that out. Right.
Yeah.
And he's going to need his wife and his best friend to work it through. And that's where we have to be willing to try to, be the listening ear and not the fuel.
Yes. Yes. What about, I'm thinking sometimes the church hurt for pastor's wives comes from their own husband. And I'm not talking about like abuse or neglect and that kind of thing. I'm just talking about, let's say, you know, there's a consistent season of feeling like the church comes first, something like that. What would you say? And I'm asking you this because you have walked through a divorce and it was right. a really tough situation where you were living in kind of this uncertainty. Mm-hmm. What would you say to a woman in that situation?
Oh gosh. I just acknowledge that hurt in marriage is so deep and personal, and that I'm sorry, you know, that she's going through that. I think it's similar advice to what we were talking about before with congregants, where if you don't give your husband the chance to change by sharing your hurt, then you're robbing him of a chance to grow. And so, so often I think wives get so caught up in the whole submission issue that they don't believe that they're actually able to be a sister in Christ to their spouse, mm. right? And so they believe that confrontation isn't submissive. That's not true at all. And we're supposed to submit one unto another. And so I think to read scripture well and to live it out well means that you actually love your spouse enough to have those hard conversations. And so I think the loving thing to do, if you are experiencing, again, not like true abuse or neglect, but if you're hurt, is to share that and say, hey, this is where I'm at. And I just want you to know, and then let them, I don't know if other husbands are like mine, but he likes to take time to think through things. I'm a fast talker, but he likes to mull it over, which I think is probably much wiser. And so for me, if I throw something at Evan and say, hey, you know, this is something I was thinking, or if I say, hey, I was hurt, he needs a minute to process that and to think through. And so I think giving them space to tell them how we feel and then walk away, let them mull it over, let them work it through, let the Holy Spirit do a work. But you definitely also want to have a friend or two, probably outside the church, that you can confide in about your marriage, because maybe I'm wrong about this, but I don't really feel like I can talk to anyone in my local congregation about my marriage because he's their pastor. And I want to respect that in their life. And so to have a friend or two that are outside your church that you can confide in about your marriage and get prayer for and be more vulnerable, I think is so important for pastors' wives.
Mm-hmm. That's helpful. Thank you. Well, I want to close by talking about your book. You mentioned it at the beginning. It's called Talking Back to Purity Culture. And you're really passionate about this. People who have been hurt, we're talking about church, who have been hurt by this purity culture. So I would love for you to explain what you mean by that. Like, what is purity culture, and what do you want those who have been hurt in this way to know?
I mean, it's a big topic. I think one of the debates that's happening right now is what it was purity culture. And so some people would say purity culture is defined by the idea that sex belongs in marriage between one man and one woman. But I have an Orthodox traditional sexual ethic. And so I actually believe that that was the good part of purity culture, that message, but that we added so much junk to it and communicated it in so many damaging ways that this very good message of where sex belongs became distorted. We added guilt and misunderstandings about gender. And so my book is about preserving the core biblical truths about sexuality, but challenging the way the church has communicated about them. And so for instance, one of the things that all the books I read growing up on purity culture is they basically promised that if you were really good, if you stayed a virgin until marriage, that, you know, you'd get married, you'd have kids, you'd have great sex. And there's just an entire generation who is experiencing the fallout of trying to follow all the rules, and they didn't get the perfect marriage, or they're divorced now, or they're not having great sex, or they can't have children, they're struggling with infertility. And so I think there were a lot of these false promises that became attached to a true message, but then we made it all about reward, right? Do this so you can get this. When really sexual purity is, the pursuit of sexual purity is about the glory of God. It's not about what we get, because some of the most faithful Christians I know are celibate and single. And they're not getting, quote unquote, the reward that was promised, but they are honoring the Lord. And so I think that there is a generation that's working through those false promises. And there's also a generation that's working through feelings of being neglected because purity culture failed to address perpetual singleness, same-sex attraction, and infertility. And so they're dealing, or painful sex was another thing. I interviewed a lot of women who deal with that. So they're dealing with these realities that purity culture never had a category for, and they feel like God is punishing them or has abandoned them. And so they're having to look back at the Bible and say, okay, what does the Bible actually say about sexual purity and what we get for it? And what is our motivation for pursuing sexual purity? We could do a whole other podcast on that and what ways that men and women have been talked about in ways that aren't biblical, but you'll have to read the book.
Yeah. We'll just say, go get the book, Talking Back to Culture. I mean, Purity Culture, not Talking Back to Purity Culture by Rachel Welcher. Rachel, thank you so much for joining me today. And just saying, I loved how you were like, you know what? I'm still in this process. I'm still learning. Sure. Because we all are. This is something we are constantly navigating and learning. And this is the way God is sanctifying and growing us. So thank you for giving voice to that today.
Oh, it was a privilege. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to By Faith. Don't forget to head over to lifeway.com/seekfirst to register to join me for Lifeway's online Bible study. Join me next week on By Faith as I chat with Christina M., a pastor's wife in Canada, about raising PKs. Until then, friends, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.